All right, welcome. This is Engaging Postmoderns with Larka Vesper and Betsy Severin. This is Larka Vesper.
I'm Larka, and I'm on staff at University of Nebraska, as is Betsy and Lincoln, and this is my 9th year on staff, and for my part-time job, I'm a nanny of 2 9-year-olds that are twins, a boy and a girl.
Like I said, I'm Betsy. This is my 7th year on staff at Christian Challenge part-time, and when I'm not doing that, I teach aerobics in the Lincoln area. And we are going to be, what we're sharing tonight, a lot of it is based out of the book I Once Was Lost, which is by Don Everetts and Doug Schopp. You can buy this in the bookstore here. It's on the evangelism table. And Lark is going to show you what it looks like. It looks like this. It's been really helpful. Our staff read it this semester, and so that's kind of where we got, that's where we got the bulk of this information.
Yeah, the little byline on here is what postmodern skeptics taught us about their path to Jesus. And obviously with our job, and I think all of us on campuses, like, we're trying to help college students pursue Jesus wholeheartedly and for their friends to learn how to intentionally pursue their friends. And so in Nebraska, it just seems like it's been a little bit harder than we've known some of the methods and some of the ways to reach people, and it just has been a little bit different and harder. And so sometimes it's deciphering where students are at can take a long time, and it can be difficult, and a lot of them probably wouldn't say they specifically have a personal relationship with Jesus until some time has gone by. So when we heard about this book from our director, we were excited to hear that some people have seen, in people that are coming to Christ now, they've seen some patterns in all these different stories that they've heard about. So that's our why we're interested in this.
Right, and I guess our vision for today is we want to give you guys a tool out of this book to help us all have a better understanding of the culture around us and give us some new categories to think in, as opposed to, this person is not a Christian, this person is a Christian. This kind of makes things a little bit, gives us a few more options, I guess. And so hopefully as we learn about this, you guys will be more encouraged when you see that God is doing something in your friends. And you might have an opportunity to be part of that. And hopefully that will give us the strength to pursue beyond feeling like this person's never going to come to Christ, or the disappointed feeling when people aren't responding in the way that we wish that they would. And Lark is going to, we're going to kick things off by kind of defining for this workshop what we mean by postmodern.
So when you saw I was about postmodern, you probably already had an idea because it's a very common term now. But I think that's a little bit dangerous because everybody comes in with different ideas already of what that means or what they think people that are postmodern, how they would act. And so we thought we would just talk about kind of like where we're, what we're using as the definition. And like the obvious thing that we know is that there's been a shift from the modern way of thinking, and that would be like things that could be explained scientifically would be true, and if you believe, you could believe it if it could be understood. But then with the postmodern, it's not totally clearly defined yet, but it has a lot to do with being in process, and sometimes like something might make sense or you can understand it, but it still doesn't hold meaning for a person. Like they could understand it, but it still doesn't have value for them. And so in the book, there's a few things, the way they described postmodern, and they said it's more experiential than propositional in our connection to truth. It's more communal than individualistic. There's a value for authenticity over theory or right answers, and they have a tendency to understand struggle more than certainty, especially like naive certainty of people not really knowing why they just accept the truth because that's what they've been told is the truth and it makes sense. So you can see where there's some clashes between using modern methods to in the postmodern world and like, for example, delivering the facts and then calling for a response, where the postmodern person, they want to hear people's own experience with faith, including the parts that you haven't figured out yet, and they want to journey and try things out so that they may not respond to a sort of invitation like that.
Yeah, and one illustration we kind of have for this is the color grid. If Larka would hold that up. All right, so on a color grid, you have, you know, basically every imaginable color. And over here, we have some of kind of the red colors. And over here, it's more the yellows. And in between are the orange. Now, if I asked one of you to come up here and point to a point on the color graph and say, okay, at what point does the orange become red? You know, Mike, he might come up and point to a point, and then I might say, okay, how about you? You come up and point to a point. You might pick a totally different point. You know, it's kind of, it's hard to define at what point the color on the color wheel goes from orange to red. And that's kind of what we've seen with postmoderns coming to Christ as well. It's not as clear cut. You know, on this day I wasn't a Christian, on this day I was a Christian. So this book kind of gave us some more tools to think through different thresholds that people go through in the process of becoming a follower of Christ.
So recently I was at a lunch with some people. I was getting to know this lady, and she was asking me how to end up at Lincoln, and I went to college at a different place, and I was talking about how I accepted Christ when I was young, and I grew up in a Christian family and everything, but I kind of had a different college experience, and then when I met some people in Lincoln, there was something different that happened, and it was like a significant time in my life. And it was about these people were asking me questions rather than reinforcing the answers that I had known, and they were accepting where I was at. I was kind of going through some stuff, trying to figure things out, and I felt like they were more accepting and not as critical about my actions at the time and the choices I were making. So I really felt like they were allowing me to be in process and to learn things in a new way. And so the lady said, so do you think that's when you actually became a Christian then? And I was like, no, I don't think so. I think it was just a different stage. Like, through our journey, there's different times of commitment and pursuit and dedication, and I felt like that was just a different part of my journey. But it helped me realize that we kind of get in this thinking sometimes of like, this is the linear way that things happen, and so this must have been that point, because everything goes like this when everybody kind of experiences the different steps in different ways in their own story. So
The authors of this book, I Once Was Lost, were both in ministry to college students, and they started researching and interviewing students and staff and trying to get a handle on how to effectively reach students for Christ, because some of the old methods weren't really working. And as they did that, they started to notice patterns in story after story of postmodern background people coming to Christ. And so they developed these, they looked at all these common threads, and they came up with 5 thresholds that students seem to cross at some point in their journey to faith. And so as Lark and I were gathering info for this seminar, we interviewed some of the students on our campus who had come to faith in Christ. And we shared with them, we asked them, you know, would you tell us your story of how you came to faith? And so they would, and then we'd say, okay, well, these authors have found these 5 thresholds. Do you recognize any of these thresholds in your story? Does this ring true? And so it was really, really fascinating, actually, to see how those thresholds did keep coming up. We were able to see the bumps, patterns. We really encouraged, we're greatly encouraged to hear them think through and share their stories with us. And I know that Lark and I have both talked about, we really want to continue to talk with the students we meet with throughout this year about, you know, where are you at in this journey? Have you crossed this threshold? Have you crossed that threshold? It kind of gives us a tool to help students continue to journey on their path from orange to red, I guess you could say. I really resonated with reading this book. I guess I would call myself a postmodern background believer. I grew up on a farm south of Lincoln, Nebraska, and my parents kind of came of age in the late 60s and early 70s, and kind of when the whole hippie thing was going on. And so I grew up, I was, let's see, my dad was a farmer, and my mom worked like in business management. So it was kind of interesting. My dad had a very stereotypical man job, and then my mom was like this feminist. And I grew up with, my parents definitely had strong values. They really valued that you shouldn't judge people or think one person is better than the other based on like their race or their religion or their sexual orientation or their sex. So I was taught, I was brought up believing those things. I was definitely brought up to be a feminist. The church that I grew up going to, they talked about like it was important to be a good person, but they didn't specifically talk a lot about having any sort of personal relationship with Christ. That was kind of my background. And When I was a freshman in high school, our high school did the musical Godspell, which is a musical based on the book of Matthew. And a lot of the songs were taken like straight out of the scripture. And as I found out about that, I became curious and wanted to read the Bible and read in the book of Matthew about where, oh my gosh, like this is totally this song in our musical. And so I had kind of a curiosity about faith for the first time, I guess. When I was a junior in high school, I got to know this girl named Andrea, and we went to a camp together. And she was maybe one of the first evangelical Christians that I had gotten to know. And I noticed that when we go to bed at night, she would do a devotional book before she went to sleep. And I thought that was really interesting because she was one of the nicest girls I'd ever met. She seemed pretty normal, and she had this thing going on between her and God that she actually wanted to do religious stuff. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. Let's see. Then the next thing I guess that happened was right before my senior year of college, started dating a guy named Craig, and he was agnostic. And we had a conversation one night about why he didn't necessarily believe in God. And I remember we were sitting on the hood of my Volkswagen GTI and watching the sunset and talking about God and why Craig thought he didn't necessarily exist. And it really upset me. I started thinking, like, well, if there's no God, like, what's the point of life and that sort of thing. And so that night when I went home, I prayed that if God was real, that he would show me somehow. And then I went to bed, and I don't think I really thought about it for the next month. But I was working at Taco John's in Lincoln, which is a taco place, and this man got hired named Kevin. And Kevin was about 21 years old, and he had long hair and earrings and tattoos, and he was always telling people about Jesus, which kind of blew my categories, again, of what a Christian was like. He would talk to us about Jesus, his fellow workers. He would talk to the customers that came in about Jesus. And, you know, we kind of thought he was kind of loony. But there was something really likable about him. And one night he invited a bunch of us who worked there over to his house to hang out and watch a movie, he said. So we went over, and we were sitting around his kitchen table eating chips and dip, and his stepdad's there. And his stepdad starts telling us about Jesus and how we can have a personal relationship with him and invite him into our heart and make him the boss of our life. And so he's like, does anybody want to pray to receive Christ? And I was like, well, sure. Like, that sounds okay. I could do that, I guess. It can't hurt. And so he led me and a few other people in a prayer to asking Jesus into our hearts. And then after that was over, I was like, well, that was cool. And they said, well, the Bible says actually you're supposed to believe and then be baptized. So the next thing would be to get baptized. Do you want to get baptized? I was like, yeah, okay, why not? And so they ran water in the bathtub, and I got baptized in their bathtub. And I was like, wow, that was pretty cool, I guess. And the next thing, I guess, that happened was they started talking to me about a lot of different things about the Christian faith, like the rapture and about, I don't know, Christian music and how to study the Bible. And I continued to work at Taco John's for a couple months more before school started again. And Kevin was really the first person to disciple me and teach me about reading scripture and what it means to walk with Jesus. And then during my senior year, I found some other people who were an encouragement to me. Andrea became a really good friend. And I came to college, and I really started pursuing my relationship with Christ and eventually got involved with Christian Challenge, and here I am before you today. So that's kind of my story.
Well, everyone should have handouts or if you need them. But we're going to finally talk about these mysterious thresholds that we've mentioned briefly, but I'm just going to go through them briefly right now, and then we'll come back to them a little bit more, but just to kind of connect these with how these would fit in Betsy's story. And the first one is the person usually crosses the threshold at some point of trusting a Christian. So moving from distrust to trust. So where in your story do you think, who were some of those people that helped you to start trusting Christians?
Well, that would definitely have been Andrea in my story. She was the first person that I was like, wow, this person is cool. And she seems to have this thing going on with God.
Yeah. So there was just something that changed the perspective of the people that you had interacted with as far as Christians. The second threshold is wondering about Jesus, moving from being apathetic to curious or kind of complacent to curious. So where in your story did you see that sparked up?
Oh, well, this actually happened before I got to know Andrea. I think that was when I was, you know, we were involved with the musical Godspell and starting to learn about the book of Matthew.
Yeah. So you had some curiosity, but it wasn't like, I'm going to start pursuing what it means to be a Christian. You were thinking, this is interesting. I want to read some in the Bible and see how this fits. The third one is being closed to change to being open to change in your life. Do you see that? Did that happen?
Yeah, I think that started when I, you know, I was talking to Craig and I prayed, God, if you're real, will you show me? And I think that stage kind of ended at the point when I prayed to receive Christ. And it was, you know, for me, it wasn't like a long thought out decision. It was like, well, I'll try this and we'll see what happens. I'm open to having my life changed.
Yeah. The fourth one is from meandering to seeking. And so this is kind of like you're kind of checking things out to you're actually seeking out what's going on. When was that in your story?
I think that was during the time when Kevin was starting to disciple me. I think, like, if it wasn't for that part, it would have been a story of, like, I prayed to receive Christ and then went along my merry way and, like, never thought about him again. But because of Kevin's investment in my life and teaching me about how to read the Bible and stuff, this was a time when I went from, oh, okay, I'm open to change, to, like, oh, wow, like, I think I've made a commitment and I want to pursue this and figure out what this is all about.
Yeah. And then the fifth one is crossing the threshold of the kingdom itself, going from lost to saved. And for you, that was a specific time.
Yeah, it was a specific time, I think. I think that it the fruit of that is that, you know, I continued pursuing Christ after I stopped hanging out with Kevin during my senior year and then into college. I kind of began, I guess, kingdom living is the term that we came up with.
So as you look through those five things that we just talked about, you can see that these are changes that occur inside a person. So that's not something that we can do these steps. Like, we can't make someone become curious or we can't make them be open to change. And so that's kind of what's unique about what we're talking about. There's a great deal of mystery involved. So we don't know how God's going to move, because we could say or do one thing with one person and that really leads to something in their life or them making a choice. And we could do the same thing with someone else and it doesn't really have an effect. And so it can be kind of discouraging because you don't have the control of, like, this is what I'm doing exactly and I'll probably hopefully see results. But it's more also just exciting because you're part of an adventure of what God's doing, and you can only offer things and you don't know how the story's going to go.
Yeah, we're going to go a little more in depth into the first three thresholds that are listed on your sheet. The reason that we're only doing the first three in depth is because of time. And also, I think that the last two are the ones that we're probably most equipped to deal with already. Probably you've been to other seminars or had teaching in your campus ministry about, like, what do you do with a person who's really seeking Christ? How do you help them, you know, get to that point of making a decision? And or how do you lead a person to Christ? So we're going to talk a lot and give you some information about the first three thresholds, which we feel like there isn't a lot of information out there about. And Lark is going to start out with talking about moving from distrust to trust of a Christian.
Yeah, so we're going to go back to number one. But this is about the person being able to trust a Christian. And many people have had interactions or from stories that we've talked with our students, they've heard about Christians in the media or from people, and they kind of think they're opinionated people who have a lot of restrictions, or they only have one thing in mind when it comes to you. They just want you to change and become like them. And this often changes in the stories, though, when they meet an actual Christian person and they experience life with them or an event with them, and they realize that these are normal. This is a normal person, someone that they could talk to and be friends with. And the only way we're going to actually have a voice with people like this is if they genuinely trust us and can be friends with us. And so it's gotten to a place now that a lot of people have been hurt by religious sayings, or there's a perception that Christians are weird or hypocrites, and they think you're just going to judge them. And so if they know that you're a Christian, they probably have some ideas and thoughts about you that may or may not be true. But this was common in the Bible. Like, this isn't something just for the generation now. Like, thinking about Paul and Jesus, they interacted with skeptical people. And we learned from Jesus that the way that he lived was he demonstrated having life with people. And he came alongside. He was approachable. He was curious. He shared normal life experiences like eating and traveling together. And we have to be aware of it's not a good feeling when you can tell that someone distrusts you just because they've heard that you're a Christian or they know that you're a Christian. And we can really have some reactions to that, of feeling that they're thinking something about us. And it can be really frustrating and hurtful. And when we know we're real people and we have struggles and we're not that different, and why are they thinking these things about us? And so we can easily get sidetracked into defending God or defending Christians or religion, and some of us just might avoid people if we sense that about they have some distrust, or we might judge them back and say, well, why are you thinking this about me? Look at your life, and who are you? And we have to choose, like, how are we going to go beyond our reactions like that and not get caught up in it being about us, but that we still want to be involved in their story.
Right, so instead of just defending or avoiding people or trying to judge them or arguing with them, there's ways that we can have kingdom habits that build trust. We can pray, work through God with our own defense, like, okay, I see that this person is, you know, a militant atheist, and I really want to run away from them because I don't feel equipped to talk about this, and I need you, God, to help me to work through my fear and trust you. And we also need to pray, of course, for them and the things that are going on in their life, and that God would show us his heart for that person. Another thing we can do is learn, try to see things from their perspective. You know, where did this distrust of Christians come from? They might have some really good reasons for not trusting Christians. What are the barriers that are in their story? Jesus really listened to people and gave them his attention. And sometimes we tend to listen. We have a tendency to listen in a way that it really looks like we're fishing for an opening to share about Jesus. But if you're really going to be effective in a kingdom builder, I guess, you need to be curious about people because you love them and not just because you're trying to talk to them about Jesus, I guess. And we need to... and so in this... the last... Where are we? Oh, I'm in the wrong page. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Bonding would be the next thing that we can do to build trust. That's the opposite of avoiding. We choose to be involved in the things they're involved in. You know, what common interests do you have with this person? Maybe an example would be like, maybe some girl on your floor invites you to watch the Super Bowl with her and some friends. And you think, well, I'd rather, you know, stay in my room and watch it with my roommate and order a pizza. But you're willing to go outside your comfort zone to be with a group of people you've never met, because you know that you're trying to bond with this person and get to know them. And, you know, sometimes when you're trying to bond and get to know unbelievers, there's going to be, you might end up in situations that you're not very comfortable with. I have an interesting story about that. When I was in college, in late college, I had a friend named Josh. He was a year younger than me. And his freshman year of college, we hung out a lot. He lived in our dorm, and we'd have meals together, me and him and a couple of our other friends, and he even got involved with Christian Challenge. And then Josh went to Disneyland to work for, did that, you know, semester at Disney thing. And during the time he was there, he came out as a homosexual. And he came back to Lincoln to visit about a year and a half later, and Josh and I hadn't really been in much contact, so we didn't have a very close relationship anymore. So when he came back, I was kind of hoping, well, maybe we'll get coffee and we'll catch up on life, but, you know, I wasn't in such a close relationship with him that I was thinking, like, you know, I'm going to try to really dig into his life and talk to him about this. You know, I was hoping, you know, maybe I'll get to sow a seed or be a blessing to his life in some way for the kingdom. So we met up at the dormitory, him and I and his other friend who lived in the dorm, who's also homosexual. And we walked downtown to this coffee house. And we get to the coffee house, and we're just chatting about, how are you doing? What have you been doing since you've been back in Nebraska? And there's this girl standing outside the coffee house with a video camera and a piece of paper. And she says, hey, I'm working on this video for my religion class at school. Can I ask you guys a few questions? And so they were like, sure. And so she points her microphone at Josh and his friend, and it's like, well, what do you think about the president? And so they kind of told her what they thought about the president, and she asked me what I thought, and I shared what I thought about the president. And then she said, what do you think about abortion? So she points the camera at Josh and his friend, and they talk about what they think about abortion, and points it at me, and I told her what I thought about abortion. And then she said, well, what do you think about Jesus Christ? And she gives me the microphone, and I said, well, you know, I think he's the, you know, I said something brilliant, I'm sure, about him being the savior of the world and the son of God and all that good stuff. I don't remember exactly. And then she gave the point of the microphone at Josh and his friends, and they're like, yeah, we agree with that. Like, I think that's right. And then she says, what do you think about homosexuality? And she points the microphone at Josh and his friend, and I'm sweating. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not how I wanted this conversation to go down. And I'm like, oh God, what do you want me to do here? I don't want to sound like a jerk. I don't want these guys to feel like I'm being judgmental, but I can't lie. You know, I can't not be truthful. What am I going to do? What am I supposed to do here? And so she gets done with Josh and his friend, and she points the microphone at me, and she's like, what do you think about the current economic crisis? And I was like, oh. I'm sure I gladly told her what I thought about the current economic crisis. But that was, you know, that was like a situation where, you know, I was scared that I was going to, you know, have to either say something compromising or really compromise my friendship with these guys. But God really helped me out. And so I think that's an illustration of, like, if you're in your heart, you're trying to pursue a relationship with someone, God's going to show you what to do in those circumstances that become sticky, I guess. Another thing we have to do to build trust is affirm people. I think we're afraid to do this sometimes because, like with my friend, we think we're going to validate something that we believe is wrong. You know, if I spend time with this person, if I go to the bar with this person or whatever, are they going to think that I think their lifestyle is fine? Let's see. But, you know, in the Bible, Paul kind of gives an example of what it is to affirm a person without necessarily, like, condoning their life. He talks about, in Acts 17, he's talking to the Greeks, I think, and about, you know, there's all these idols, and he says, you know, I see that you are in every way religious, and there's even this idol that's made to an unknown God, you know, and I'm going to proclaim to you, I've come to know this God, and I'm going to proclaim him to you. And so, you know, he affirms to them, like, I see that you're very religious. He's not coming at them being like, I see you're a bunch of demonic idol worshipers, you know. So instead of thrashing them for the ways that they are entrenched in idol worship, he affirms something that they're seeking God, and he uses that to point them to Jesus. And then finally, another way to build church is to build trust is to welcome people. You know, be hospitable and generous and serving. Open up your home to people. One thing I used to do when I lived in the dorm, whenever I went to, like, Target or the grocery store, I'd knock on everybody's door on my floor and say, hey, I'm going to Super Saver. I'm going to Target. Is there anything you need? Do you want to come with me? So just kind of involving them in your life and reaching out to them in their life as well. And so these are a lot of small steps, I guess, in what they require from us. But we have no idea what the magnitude of these actions are going to be. Once trust is built, it opens a lot of paths to communication and community and curiosity and joy in our lives as we experience friendship and possibly an unfolding story right before our eyes of someone that we really care about, little by little, coming closer to Christ. Mark is going to tell a story that we've seen just this semester of how this has happened.
Yeah, there's a girl, a freshman girl in my small group, and she came from a traditional Christian upbringing. She came to college. She's very bold, and she had some thoughts on how to approach non-Christians. And she met a girl on her floor, and because of her own boldness about sharing what she believes and what she's about, she found out that this girl was an atheist. And so Kelly asked people in Challenge to pray that Abby would come to know Christ. And I started wondering how Kelly was going to keep approaching this girl. Like, was she going to keep inviting her to Christian activities? Was she going to just keep trying different evangelism methods with her? And so while I was meeting with Kelly a few weeks ago, she told me the story of the great weekend that she had with her friends. And she and some friends from our small group wanted to do something together. So they decided to go shopping, and they had asked Abby before to do things with them. And she's kind of reserved, and she usually liked to stay back and not go. But they told her they were going to shop for presents. And she said that she hasn't had a Christmas tree for years. She doesn't even buy presents for her parents. But she decided to go with them, and they all shopped, and they had a lot of fun. And she ended up buying Christmas presents. She ended up buying a tree and decorations for the tree. And so they came back, and she was super excited to put them up, and she had a really good time. And she was just – Kelly was telling me she was so happy that Abby felt comfortable coming along with them and that they all had so much fun. And we don't know what's going to happen, like, this next semester, if they're still going to be on the same floor or if they're going to hang out again. But it was just so encouraging for for me to see that Kelly was so excited to think that God really used them and in Abby's story, and that God wanted Abby to have this joyful experience this Christmas and to really hang out with these people. And so it was just a small step, but I think that it could be huge in Abby trusting some Christians like Kelly, and she's met all these other friends of hers that she really started feeling comfortable around and is making some steps towards things.
We're going to move on to threshold two, where we go from being complacent about the things of God to curious. Just because a person starts to trust you as a Christian doesn't mean that they're brimming with questions and want to know about Jesus or even know anything about your Christian faith. But, you know, we can help that along by being curious about the other person and what they believe. My roommate, Lisa, is in this Bible study, and she was telling me this great story a couple months ago. There's a girl in her Bible study that's about to go be a missionary in Spain for 5 years. And this girl, we'll call her Laura. Laura was telling the group about, you know, I'm so excited about going to be a missionary in Spain. And I'm so excited because I feel like where I'm working right now, this is going to be a great opportunity for me to share about Jesus, because I'm going to be, you know, leaving the country and people are going to ask about, you know, oh, tell me more about this. Why would you want to give your life, you know, to do that for 5 years? But Laura said, you know, the thing is, it's weird because I'll say to my coworkers, yeah, I'm going to be quitting my job and moving to Spain for a couple years to talk to people about Jesus. And my coworker will say, oh, that's interesting, huh? I've been to France and England and Wales. And yeah, Europe is really cool. And Laura said, like, that's so bizarre. Like, I don't want to hear about your trip to England and Wales. Like, I want to tell you about Jesus. And Lisa was like, oh my gosh, that is so the point. Of course they're not asking you more about Jesus. You don't care about their trip to England or Wales. Like, if you want people to be curious about you, you have to be curious about them first. Because it's not something that, you know, unbelievers, there's very few unbelievers that, you know, are going to ask you about those things. Especially if they don't sense that you care about them and their stories. So there are ways that you can share about your life in a very vivid and real way that will invite people to be curious. If you think about the way that you explain the things that you're involved in, like your BSU, BSM, or Christian Challenge Group, you could generalize and explain things very quickly, because when someone asks you, what are you doing over Christmas break, you're like, they're not going to understand about life impact. I'm going to try to get out of this conversation as fast as possible. So like Larka, if Larka works for a couple and she nannies their kids. And, you know, maybe the mom would ask, what's the mom's name?
Trish.
Maybe Trish is asking you, like, Larka, why are you going to be gone for a week? Tell me about that. What would be a way that you could explain it to Trish and get out of that conversation as fast as possible?
I'm like, oh, I'm just going to this conference thing with the Christian group that I work for. We're just going for a few days.
Right, yeah, and she'd probably be like, okay, when are you going to be back? You know, can you babysit the next Friday and Saturday and Sunday? Yeah. All right, what if you wanted to try to create curiosity in Trish about what you're doing? What would you say?
I'd say, I'm so looking forward to this week. I'm so thankful that you let me have these days off. I'm going to go with some of our friends. We're taking all these challenge kids, and we're going on a road trip, and we're going to be with hundreds of college students, and I'm so excited. It's always encouraging to hear people that are so passionate about Jesus that it changes something in their life, like they've traveled to Zimbabwe, or they're mentoring college students, or they're doing these unique things in their life just because they're so passionate about Jesus. So I think that would be a little bit, like, she might not even ask verbal questions, which she sometimes asks things, or, you know, like, are you going to be doing part of it? I could tell her I was doing a seminar, and they might not actually ask questions, but they might start thinking inside some things like, that is strange. Like, I don't know any Christians like that passionate I don't know of college students going to hear about God or something because they're not believers. But you might have an opportunity to ask them a question too. Like, well, what are you passionate about? Or, you know, did you go to anything in college or anything like that? So the things that you share about your own life might open up new categories for them. They might hear ideas like of things they haven't considered before, like the meaning behind the choices that we make in life. And eventually we pray that they would engage and that they would ask some questions or seek things out on their own. Then hopefully they'll get to the point where they can interact with you and really be honest about what they're thinking about things and ask you questions, and you'll get a chance to share about how you're feeling about things. And so another way is that we can ask questions back to questions. That was part of my story of change, and not just giving me the answers. Like, we can get so excited when they ask something that we feel like there's an opening, and it's like, oh my goodness, I'm so glad they asked this. Like, here's, I'm going to tell you all this stuff. Like, finally, all this stuff I've been waiting to tell you. But really, sometimes we need the tension to be there a little longer, and we need to let the curiosity build. So I think, Betsy, you had a thought about what that might be.
Yeah, one example of what that might look like is actually from the last seminar I was went to about trying to reach people in community college. The guy who was speaking, Shannon, told this story about he was in a class, and the professor walked in and asked, what did Jesus look like to the whole class? And everybody went around the room, and he said, what do you think Jesus looked like? And the first guy was like, well, he had long hair and a beard, and he wore a pink robe or whatever. And the next guy was like, you know, maybe something similar. They get to the end of the group, and Shannon, the guy, was like, well, actually, you know, Jesus was, he had a beard. We know that from the scripture. And we know, like, you know, he might have said something like, he wasn't very attractive. We know that from, like, Isaiah. And, you know, like, he was Jewish, so his skin was darker. And that would be a right answer. But then Shannon's friend, who was also Christian, sitting next to him, said, you know what? I don't know what Jesus looked like, but I bet if he walked through the door, I would recognize him. And that's the kind of answer that creates curiosity among people, like, what's that about, you know, more than just giving the right information. That's an example of how curiosity can be built.
Yeah. So we don't want them to just take our ideas because they sound good, and they probably won't, because of the whole, just because it makes sense doesn't mean that it has meaning. But another way for curiosity to happen is in the midst of community, like in Abby and Kelly's story, that when they see it isn't just you that's the serving person or caring or has interest in their life, but you hang out with a group of friends that does similar things like this, that it might bring up even more questions or thoughts. And so through this stage, the complacent to curious, we want people to develop an interest in Jesus. And so you might be surprised. I mean, a lot of people already are curious about Jesus, maybe not Christians, but a lot of people have heard things about how he lived his life. And so we want to share stories about how we love Jesus or the things we've seen him do, and not just giving answers in theology. So going on to number three.
So the third threshold is being open to change in your life. And this is usually a really hard threshold for people to get to or to cross, because, you know, people, we don't like change very much. Life change is difficult. And the type of change we're talking about is completely affects their worldview. They're going to become aware of unanswered questions and disappointments. I saw this in my sister's story. No one in my family is currently pursuing a relationship with Christ. I have two younger sisters. And the middle sister, I talked, when I was in college, for some reason, she was willing to let me drag her to a Joshua McDowell conference night. And so we went to the conference, and she seemed to enjoy it okay, and Josh gave the invitation at the end of the night, and she actually raised her hand, that indicating that she made a decision to follow Jesus. And so driving her home from this conference night, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Like, maybe we can start meeting once a week, and I can start discipling you. And she was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I'm not wanting to get, like, all crazy about this. Like, I just want to have a little bit more God in my, you know, daily life. And I wish I'd had this book back then, because I would have realized that, okay, she's gone to curious, but she's definitely not at threshold three where she's open to change in her life. And this is really difficult to watch people in this stage, because you keep hoping that they're going to be like, yes, I'm going to go for it. I want to make a change in my life. But they'll tend to go back and forth. And it's really kind of unclear where they're at any given point. You want them to grasp change and have life transformation. But the worst thing you can do at this point is really pressure them. They really need your patience and to know that you're going to be their friend no matter what they decide to do. This is really an opportunity for them to belong before they believe, I guess, to try on what it would be like for them to live differently. They can pursue what it would look like for them to let go of disbelief. That might happen in a small group setting, in a community of friends. And this is where you really want to be, I mean, you want to be praying for them throughout this whole process, but this is a really great time to be praying strongly for them. There's a lot of dark parts of their story and lies that are probably going to creep up and try to keep them from choosing to be open to change.
Yeah, I think one example, you might have this in your, whatever your small groups are like, but for us, our edge groups are, we want people to come, even if they're not believers yet, and we want people to be able to participate in the things that we're doing, and so we'll do different worship activities, like, you know, with Play-Doh, or you probably heard about, or, like, for example, just simple prayer things. And I remember one of the first edge groups that we were just doing a simple prayer thing that was just like, if you have something, you say it, and then someone else in the group would say, I'll pray for it, and they'd pray for it right then, and then we move on. And I just remember one guy that, like, didn't really know where he was at, and he came from a different background, didn't really seem that interested, but he came because his friends were there, and he was like, we're like, who wants to pray for this person? And he was like, I can, I guess. And so he didn't really know what to say or how to do it. And he was like, is that okay? How he said it. And it was so exciting, like, it, that he could try these things and start being part of what he was seeing and see what would it be like for him to pursue these things and be part and to actually start praying and stuff. So things like that, that they can start trying it out and seeing what would it be like for them to trust Jesus as Lord. And so, like she was saying about being patient versus pressuring, like, it's kind of like a fine line. Like, we still want to be truthful about the brokenness and the disappointments we see in their life, but then we also want to be kind, and we want to share our struggles. And it's just doing things, like, maybe you can help those who are stuck in fear, like, let's pursue this kingdom living together. We can do a serving opportunity together, or let's pray for something specific that's going on in our lives or in your life together, or encouraging them to try a spiritual discipline that you've done before. So it's kind of this thing of you're helping people connect dots and you're reflecting things back to them. We're helping lead them, but we're not pressuring them. So we're challenging, but we're being patient. And so we're just coming beside them as God's moving in them to overcome some of these fears or whatever is holding them back from being open fully to change. So there's two more, and we're going to briefly do those.
Yeah, we're going to kind of fly through the last two. Threshold four is from meandering to seeking after God. This is where they can make the choice to lean into the journey and really seek out answers for themselves. They might be really involved in your, you know, Christian challenge group at this point. They might be involved with community events like worship or Bible discussions, but that doesn't mean they're seriously pursuing Christ. It seems like I see a lot of students that come into our ministry that are at this point, I guess. They become... if you're meandering, there's not like a sense of urgency that's going on. But at this threshold, this is where they start to become proactive and really start to seek things out. And they're pursuing the truth about Jesus and what implications it might have for their own life. So at this threshold, what you want to do is live out the kingdom in front of them. Be vocal about what's happening in your own walk with Christ. Talk about how God is challenging you. Pray in front of them. Invite them to pretty much anything that, you know, your BSU or your group is doing. And share experiences from your own life instead of just like this Bible verse or, you know, this story in the Bible. They're going to really be interested in how you've experienced things. And you can model kind of for them like how to pursue God. Like at this point, you might even be willing to say, this is how I spend time alone with God. Like, would you like to try that with me sometime? And then there comes a point in all that where you might say to them, are you ready to choose to follow Jesus and be a disciple of his? And Lark will talk about that.
Yeah, in the book, it was kind of like, this is the part where they make a choice. And so, I don't know if we'll give an example, but like, when we were thinking about Peter and the things that happened in his life, it was like, what are some things that have happened in Peter's life? Like, what are things that happened in his story? How did his story go?
You know?
He was on the water and sank after he
Okay.
lost the goal. Like, took his eyes off Jesus and he started to sink.
Okay, so he walked on water and then he sank. What else happened in Peter's story?
He left his boat to follow Jesus.
He left his boat to follow Jesus. What else happened?
He denied Christ.
What else happened?
He got to go to Christ to be part of the transfiguration. We'll see that.
He got to be part of the transfiguration. Okay, at what point in Peter's story did he accept Jesus as his Savior and come to know the Lord, do you think?
Is it when Jesus asked him, like, who do you think I am?
You could say that, but then, like, 2 seconds later, he was like, you know, like, oh, this isn't going to happen to you. And Jesus was like, get behind me, Satan. And so you know, it's almost like he didn't quite get it at that point. It's complicated. That's the point we're trying to make, that it's complicated in Peter's story. If you look at Paul's story, it's very obvious. Like, he was on the road, he was struck blind, you know, it was like he encountered Jesus, boom. But Peter's story was a lot different.
Yeah, so it's just totally different. And so they were kind of like, this is the point where the decision's made. You know, it's very clear. And we were kind of thinking, just from our stories that we've heard from the students, that we kind of call it kingdom living also. And people might pray the prayer at any point. Like Betsy was kind of at one point, and then she kind of got more serious later about following Christ. And for some, yeah, like it happens at different thresholds. And then the actual commitment and living out happens later. And so it's kind of like, again, back to the grid that we talked about at the beginning, is it's hard to tell for some people where the specific point happened that they would say that they've been following Christ. And so part of the problem, too, is that when we've asked people stories, they're looking back on their story and seeing when things happen. So it's kind of looked at differently. So if there is a specific time when someone makes a decision to follow Christ, then it should be shared and celebrated. But most people we talk to, they didn't have a specific time like that that would be able to be celebrated and stuff. So in the book, it talks about the importance of this isn't the end. Like, just because you've been praying for this and you've been walking beside this person and waiting for so long that now that they've accepted, it's kind of the end. But they're saying in the book, especially, there's a lot of suggestions of what they need after this, because the next year of knowing Christ is going to cause all this change and all these questions. And so they're really going to need people to come alongside them and be involved with them and everything. And we all need community, and hopefully you have this in your campus group, that people can work out their faith and be part of community. So something to remember, too, is you're not likely going to be involved in all of these thresholds in one person's life. You might just be the one that they come to trust. Like, Andrea probably had no idea her point in Betsy's story, that she was just somebody that was being herself with her relationship with Christ, and it helped Betsy to trust a Christian. Or maybe later you get to be part of the community where they get to belong before they actually believe. And so that's part of the adventure, is to interact where God's working and to look around you and see what he's doing. So since it's not a method, you have the opportunity to talk to God. You got to be aware of people. You can offer curiosity. And you're going to have to just move in this adventure that he's doing and whatever part that they're in.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now we get to do something kind of experiential and fun. I have 5 stories of students from our campus that we've kind of adapted into a short form. And in your rows, I'm going to give you one story to consider as a row. And you're going to take your 5 thresholds handout and try to pick out what are some of the thresholds you see in this person's story of coming to faith. We're going to do that for about 5 minutes, and then we're going to have question and answer time. So
there's no right answers, and you're not going to see all the thresholds in all of them, possibly. So just observe what you see.
All right. Well, we hate to break up the fun, but we do want to give you guys an opportunity to ask questions. So raise your hand. We'd love to attempt to answer any questions you have.
Say that you were hoping we'd talk about, or you've found some things yourself.
Go ahead.
These don't necessarily happen in order, do they?
He asked if these happen in order. No, they don't necessarily happen in order. Yeah. That's a great question. He asked if the postmodern thought process is generally more prevalent in younger generations, or just it's for such a time as this. What do you think, Larka?
I think it's confusing. Like, I would think it's more younger, but then, like, looking at our stories, like, I think you can look at it 2 different ways, kind of. Like, Betsy could have told her story to some people, like, you know, I was at Taco John's, and this person told me about Jesus, and I accepted Christ, and that's how it was. But then actually thinking about it, like, it really was a process, and all this other stuff was involved. So I don't know. It seems younger just because a lot of people are used to everybody was doing the modern way of thinking before, and it seems like some people are still used to that's just how you think about life. But I don't know. Like, do you have any thought yourself?
I think it depends on the person. Like, if you were going to witness to my parents, which that'd be great, you would want to do it as a postmodern way, even though they're, you know, in almost 60 years old. But I think it depends on the way a person grows up.
But then, like, too, like, when we were doing overseas missions, like, we happened to be on the same team, and, like, all the people from our campus were kind of thinking one way about how you do life, and this is how you, you know, you build relationships this way and everything. And then when we got overseas, it was like we found out, like, really, we could be doing it this other way that we're not used to, just because that's what works overseas better. And that was kind of what our director told us, too, of, like, well, overseas, it really does work to do these things that we found on our own campus. These methods are not really working. And so it does make me think, like, there is, you got to kind of know a little bit about the people group or what to see, like, what actually is meeting people or working. And so I think that's why I was excited about this book of, like, what is working? What is working with these people?
Nothing seems to be working.
Yeah. So any other things you found out looking at the stories or questions?
All right, well, we'll stick around for a few minutes if you guys want to ask us anything personally. But really enjoyed being here, and thanks so much for coming, and have a great night.